My guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. There's a subsite called nukelies.org, which I became aware of a couple of years ago. Anyway, welcome to the program, Ray.
Hello.
How are you doing? Yes. Yes.
Oh,
how are
okay.
you doing? I didn't hear your first couple of words. So.
Sorry, I was a bit worried that it wasn't working.
No.
I'm fine.
Good, good.
We're all
technically advanced here, and I think we can hear you, and you can hear us, and we have a very good board op who handles any kind of problems that might arise. So anyway, it's
I'm
good
sure
to have
a,
you on the program.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a wonderful multimedia auditorium style setup. Yeah, thanks for your invitation. I gather I've got about 4 minutes before your first advertising break. I was going to tell you about my
website. Actually, you have two.
2 minutes.
So,
ah, well, okay.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us about your website.
As you were kindly saying to everybody, yes, I've got two websites in one, big-lies.org and nukelies.org. And basically, I'm interested in revisionism applied to science, you know, which is quite unusual. There are plenty of social scientists and economists and so on, people who study wars and all this sort of thing, and of course there's ample scope for corrective revisionism there. The Big Lies one has material on a range of topics. It's got biology, medicine, AIDS, diet and cancer, that kind of thing, and also material on modern physics, as it's still called, you know, essentially 20th century physics, including a lot of, am I allowed to say the word bullshit? I don't know.
Well, actually, you're not supposed to use that word on RBN, but we know. So, you could just say BS. How's that? That'll be the code, okay?
Okay. And there's also material actually on things like where I became politically aware at the time of the Vietnam War. I've got material on Vietnam there. I've also got stuff on Jews and the Holocaust, including a talk I gave 15 years ago now. It's incredible how time flies. And I've also got some lighter stuff on things like rods and Göbekli Tepe, which I think may well be a fraud, that sort of thing. Now, if I've got time to get this in, Nukelies is a frozen forum on nuclear mythology. In other words, it was a forum, but the chap who ran it got cold feet and deleted it. But I had a backup copy, so I've replaced it. And that suits me, in fact, because I really, the hassle of monitoring these things is quite there's too much. I wanted to avoid it, but I do occasionally insert new stuff. So if anybody looks at nukelies.org, you'll see the front page, and it's got the theme of it basically is that nuclear weapons are and were a hoax. They never worked. Okay.
Interesting. All righty. I'm sure that our listeners will want to know exactly what you think. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Okay.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. Go there. There is just a massive amount of information, and you'll just get lost there for a week, probably.
Okay, am I back online?
You are. You're back online.
Well, that was a long 3 minutes, wasn't it?
It's a good 3 minutes. It allows for, you know, bathroom breaks and all kinds of things. So
yeah,
it's a good 3 minutes.
Yeah, very useful. Okay, now Well, as I was saying before, I was interrupted. Yeah, nuclear. It's a forum about nuclear myths. There are two separate subdivisions. Really, there's a nuclear weapons thing and there's a nuclear power thing. About which are separate, you know, technologically separate. That is to say, if nuclear weapons turn up a fraud, as in my view is very likely, it's still possible that nuclear power could work, although, you know, opinions differ on that. Anyway, the nuclear arrangement is, if anybody looks, there are topics, we've tried to arrange it in a rational order, designed to be logically kind of separated.
You have it all in tables. Okay, that's good. Yeah.
That's the idea. It's, you know, I've got used to it. It looks very straightforward to me, but probably people new to it will see loads of words and get and possibly get discouraged. I don't know. But there's a there's a section there, number 5, on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which of course are major players in the drama, and the view of the site. We had about 20 or 30 regular contributors, some of them, you know, quite eminent, some of them were, you know, did a serious amount of work on it, and we all agreed that it was in fact firebombed, as was Tokyo, and in fact the whole of Japan was firebombed. And if you look
as
at the evidence,
as was Germany,
yep, indeed, absolutely. And I mean the technology was devastating, so it does open the rather kind of tedious question that if you can bomb them anyway, why bother to spend millions on a, what was then millions on a new kind of weapon? Anyway, that's
like with the Manhattan Project. Are you saying that the Manhattan Project was just a big farce to transfer money somewhere else?
It's quite possible. We look at scams in the past. There's a section there. It's number the third one. That's plans, conspiracies, wars, and hoax maintenance. Because whenever you've got a hoax, of course, you have to keep it going. You have to either maintain it or have an exit strategy. The next part is to do with exit strategies. I mean, this is what's happening with the Holocaust at the moment. Too many people are aware that it's a phony. And so if you're a planner, you have to decide whether to carry on with it to the bitter end or just stop mentioning it or something. And the same thing is true with nuclear weapons at the moment. There are various strategies to phase them out. For example, not mention them. Another strategy is to pretend that there was a lot of fuss about nothing. There are several websites out there with people who get funded for it, you know, for saying that, in fact, they aren't decisive weapons, despite everything you've been told, that kind of stuff. So, and there's a decommissioning thing, which is another, you know, another way of getting rid of them, getting rid of managing them, and paying off people and the rest of it. So, and now, following on from that, there's all kinds of things in the past and the future. For example, Stalin comes to it. The whole Cold War is important because of the flare-up of hostility with the USSR, which in my view was a managed flare-up. I mean, I presume you're on board with the idea.
Oh, sure. That was just a big hoax, too.
You're on... Well, yeah, I mean, if you control the media, you can
do whatever you want with people's perceptions.
It is true. I'm quite happy about it, really. I mean, the fact they take the trouble to tell lies to people in a way is encouraging because it means they take people seriously. You know, if they had infinite power, they'd just ignore what people thought. Anyway, there's a thing. Well, there's the Manhattan Project. It was basically a Jewish thing, in my view. All of the nuclear physics, you know, as it started off in the 20th century. Was European, it was British and German, but it was kind of hijacked, partly because of people like Churchill, and partly because of the Jewish control of money after 1930, you know, Bernard Baruch, people like that, the merchant bankers controlled the Manhattan Project. So all these, most of the people, all the key people were Jews, and this included after the Second World War, you had people like Hermann Kahn, talking about mega deaths, you know, and Edward Teller was another one, the supposed father of the H bomb. There were people like Ulam, and all of Churchill's technical advisors, like Lindemann, for example.
He was horrible. Oh my goodness.
Lindemann. Yeah. He was renamed Lord Sherwell to sound British. Anyway, and of course there's Oppenheimer, he must have put a foot wrong somewhere. He was kind of booted out. And there's also this business of atom spies. See, one of the things to understand with the Soviet Union is that there was quite a lot of feeling in the USA that the Soviet Union should be liberated too, just as, I mean, you know, they went to war with Hitler, so why not go to war with Stalin? And I think the point of the atom spies, they were all Jews, all the atom spies were Jews. There was a lot of controversy at the time. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that McCarthy was doing his stuff. McCarthy was anti-Jewish.
He didn't last very long. I mean, they took him out right away with the, you know, the control of the media the way that it was.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know, one of the interesting questions is how important Stalin actually was. You know, I sometimes think he was just a sort of patsy, And if anything went wrong, Jews could blame Stalin. And I think he must have got wind of the nukes. His death occurred pretty much immediately after the H-bomb tests, which in the view of nuclides were a phony. If you look at the all the little evidence there is, including, incidentally, quite an interesting thing, is the seismographs, and this is true in Japan as well. If the Japanese are very interested in earthquakes because they get a lot of them, and the seismograph records for the days of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are missing, apparently. I'm old, I haven't tried to check. And the same thing is true with the so-called SAR bomb in the USSR, which has certainly been big enough to leave some sort of trace, but apparently there isn't any. I haven't checked that myself, it just shows the way you need multiple kind of directions of attack here. The job of the atom spies was to pretend that Stalin had all these valuable secrets, and in a way it was an absurd thing to do, because the preparation of uranium-235 was very difficult. They had fantastically expensive equipment, and it was also very dangerous. In fact, I suspect they deliberately chose a very difficult thing. Uranium hexafluoride is very, very toxic, very corrosive, and it also tends to decay and leave uranium lying around. So I just can't see the Soviet Union immediately after the Second World War having the facilities to do that. So anyway, the Cold War gets dragged in it. I don't know if you're familiar with the idea that I only heard this fairly recently, that Castro was a Spanish Jew, Spanish origin Jew.
Yeah, I heard that. And of course, they don't really provide any information or sources. So you have to kind of source that stuff out yourself. But yeah, I did hear that maybe a year
ago or so. I mean, obviously, there would have been no problem in the USA bombing Cuba if they wanted to. So I think the Cuba thing was set up as a thing to keep Americans worried, so they'd keep forking out money, basically.
Right.
Incidentally, I think Che Guevara might have been genuine. He might have had genuine sympathy for poor South Americans, and very possibly that's why he was bumped off. You don't really know these things. Let me just go into the history of nuke skepticism, as far as I know it. The first trace of it known to me was in 2005, and it was a Canadian chap called Roger Desjardins, who unfortunately is not, he's kind of faded out, doesn't seem to be interested in pursuing this, but he certainly started off the whole idea, and with numerous articles in forums, and they're still there. For example, I think David Icke, I don't know what you think of David Icke, but I think he's got some of Roger Desjardins' material. And then Jesse Waugh started in 2008. He did a video. He ran a radio show, in fact, and somebody, I think he said it was somebody called James Wales or James Whalen, something like that. I never got the full story, but he put up his video in 2008, which was just called Nuke Lies. In fact, he invented the phrase nuke lies, which we've retained ever since, really. And then the next event, as far as I'm concerned, is my own YouTube. I put some up in 2010 to 2011. These are all based on material that's in the public domain. I mean, there are DVDs you can get of nuclear tests. You can also get them on archive.org, because they're government sort of released copyright-free things, supposedly sanitized. If you could get the originals, it'd probably be a lot of giveaway material. Anyway, and then March 2011, Jess put up the Nuclize Forum, and that what's on your screen now, if you're looking at it, dates from 2011 to 2012. And I mean, some of the stuff got quite number of hits. The one about Iran got over 15,000 hits.
Oh my goodness!
We had some quite interesting material on all of these things. Now, it is difficult because all of these topics were set up, all the subtopics were set up, one at a time by different people, and the quality varies and the relevance varies. But basically, and I haven't attempted to order them, I've got a few introductory, what's called announcements, a few introductory files here, which direct people towards a sort of survey of the things, you know. And I'm quite pleased with the general. I mean, for example, there's a guided tour of the Hiroshima A-bomb forum. You click on that, you get a list, a description of all the pieces, and you can click on each of them. They open in new windows. So anyway, that's the situation. That's 2005. It started, and right.
All right. We are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. Now, is what you're saying is that you do not believe that nuclear power, as they have promoted it, actually exists. And a while back, I ran into some video about Galen Windsor, W-I-N-S-O-R, and I watched this video, and he seemed to indicate, in fact, he did indicate, that we have an overdeveloped fear of radiation that has been exaggerated to scare people so that a few powerful people can maintain total control of the world's most valuable power resource. Now, is that what you're saying?
No. Well, in the first place, as far as we can see, nuclear power is probably a complete hoax. There are two theories. One is that it's a dump load, you know. Shall I explain all this stuff? You get used to switching on electrical stuff and you expect the voltage to be right, you know, you expect it to work. But this is only possible by quite an elaborate behind-the-scenes balancing act, you know. And let me give you an example. This is an example I give for Britain, and it probably applies to you as well. If there's a ball game or something, and you've got, you know, 1 million viewers, 10 million viewers or something, and they all get up halfway through and make a coffee with their, whatever, 2-kilowatt machine or something, that's 2 gigawatts. It's enough to, an entire power station is needed just for that, maybe several power stations. So what they do is they have their systems going all the time. I mean, they scale them down in at night, that sort of thing. They scale them down when electricity is not needed so much. But there's an awful lot of spare capacity. The dump load is basically just a sort of damn great heater, usually cooled by water, and they're necessary. You have to have them. If you have a caravan or something with its own power supply, they have dump loads for when you're not using all the full range of stuff. So that's one theory. There's another theory, which I think is coming to the fore, which is based on an idea of thorium power, which is being promoted. There's a whole pressure group in London run by Jews as a charity promoting thorium power. And its special point, it was designed by Edward Teller before he died. And it's supposed to be underground. The great attraction is underground. I wouldn't be at all surprised if that's just a way of disposing of junk. So basically, if you look for, there are several arguments for this. I think the first person to make them was Roger Desjardins in Canada. That whenever there are power cuts, you know, huge ones, there is no electricity that actually comes out of alleged nuclear power. They just can't cut the mustard. All they are is ways of using up electricity. And I'm sure, you know, when they were developed, they probably did experiments as well. There was plenty of scope for experimental work, which of course they need power for. So they're connected up to the main grids, as of course they would have to be, you know, if they were actually generating electricity, they'd have to be connected up. But if you look at the figures, you never get more than about a sixth or an eighth or something of the power in a country attributed to nuclear power. And that's consistent with having a spare capacity of, you know, sixth to an eighth, where people sort of switching on and off. The only exception that I know of is in France and Germany. Now, France is supposed to have nuclear power on a large scale. If you actually check it, you'll find they're connected up to the German grid. And moreover, they're in the process of closing it down. If you look at our section on nuclear power and exit strategies, you'll find, in fact, all the countries, they're all trying to close it down. I suspect is because they're being sussed. They're trying to say that it's, you know, too dangerous. Now, the Windsor thing, Galen Windsor, in my view, is just a kind of irrelevance, really. He's probably promoted, you know, paid by the nuclear power lobby, which, of course, you know, if you've got a big fraud, which I interpret this as being, like NASA as an example, you know, if you've got a big fraud, you don't actually have to produce much in the way of actual output, you know. I mean, everybody knows what an orange is like or something, or a house. So if you produce orange juice or housing, you've got to have an end product. With things like NASA, they can devote a huge amount of their budget to just propaganda, you know. It's the same, in my view, with nuclear power. But it should, in my view, it should be investigated, you know. I think it should be investigated by people who are both competent and honest, if you can find them. But I think you'll find, if you watch it carefully, that nuclear power will be, there'll be embarrassed things said, and it'll slowly fade out and not be mentioned anymore. And there are various, oh dear, there's so many indicators and things. One example of the way radiation was promoted was, do you remember the Lucky Dragon? Does that ring a bell with you? It's a Japanese fishing boat, which supposedly wandered into a cloud of radiation from an H-bomb test in the 50s, it must have been. And there's a lot of, I think the film The Incredible Shrinking Man was based on it. There's a sort of little boat surrounded by mist, and then they're all supposedly poisoned. In fact, most of the people in the Lucky Dragon, most of these sailors, fishermen, all lived to the expected date. And there are other things like, for example, the film, The China, do you remember The China Syndrome?
That's a movie.
It was pre-Three Mile Island. I think it was to get people used to the idea of paying money for nuclear things going wrong. Because if you look up the cost of nuclear power, we've got material on
that. Oh, yeah, so they paid to clean something up that maybe didn't happen? Okay. We do have a break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. My view is that certain people discovered back in the 1800s that energy was free, and they co-opted this readily available free energy so that they could charge everyone to use it, and they also developed it and weaponized it for their own objectives. Am I off target here?
Yeah, I'm afraid you are, in my view. I don't think there's such thing as free energy, except in the sense you've got sunlight. It has to be trapped and sort of processed. Incidentally, it's worth, I mean, you probably know, I think it's, that if you look at the amount of energy in the atmosphere, the amount of wind power and so on, there's one or two seconds it generates, if it could be preserved in some way, generates more energy than the human race has used up in all its existence.
Okay, but I'm thinking that this group of people did co-opt it, did trap it, and that they are charging the rest of us to use it.
What do you mean by free energy? Free in
the energy
price
that you're talking about, the energy that's available as part of the planet, the electrical planet, there is energy out there that should be available for everyone's benefit, but that a certain group of people exploited that and are charging the rest of us to they've trapped it and are charging the rest of us to use it.
Yeah, I hate to be a downer, but I think that's BS, to be honest. The only way you can handle energy is it has to be in some kind of usable form. I've never seen we did have somebody on Nuclearis who was talking about the electric planet, but I wasn't very enthusiastic. He never really made a very good case. Okay. Actually, while we're in advertising mode, can I just point out, on Nuclearis, there's another one of these radio talks, but it's over 3 hours long. So it's got, I'm deliberately trying to not overlap with that. It's got a call from a chap called First Class Skeptic, who is a very good contributor as well, so that's worth listening to if you get into this stuff. Actually, I've also got some reviews on Amazon. I put a lot on there. I've got about 250, I think, mostly book reviews. And I get, there seems to be a squad of roving Jews who go around marking them down. So I appear as about number 2 million or something on the review list. And, for example, I did quite a good one of Susan Brown Miller recently. You know, she wrote a book on rape, which in my view is very selective. It's uses selective propaganda. And I've got reviews of books on Muslims, Jews, the BBC, that kind of thing. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. Now, we were talking about evidence of sources, and as I say, DVDs, you can buy DVDs. I bought some from the US of government films, including things like Duck and Cover. I don't know if you remember that. All this kind of stuff. There's one of them has got, what's her name in it? I can't remember her name. The actress played very young. Frank Sinatra liked her. How was she called?
Mia Farrow?
Mia Farrow, absolutely right. That's a young girl sort of ducking under a table. It's all a media thing. There are newsreels as well. Sometimes you get birthday card or birthday year newsreels. You know, there's like say 20 minutes of news in, mm-hmm. say 1960 or something. And you sometimes get stuff that's leaked through there on nuclear weapons or rocketry, things like that. You know, there are all kinds of scares turned up. Do you remember the rainbow bomb? I don't know if you remember that. I think that was bullshit as well. BS, that was. Now, another interesting source is old books, because they can't be contaminated with. I mean, I've got a couple in front of me. Here's one, Atomic Energy, a Pelican book, 1 shilling and 6 pence. That's a British one.
What year is that from?
Well, it's published in 1950. It's updated from 1947. If you read these things through, you get really quite interesting stuff, because, mm-hmm. and of course it can't be edited after the event. For example, there's a map of the world showing where the uranium came from. There's a link with Belgium, in fact, the Belgian Congo. It's got quite an important link. And there's interesting stuff about atomic piles, they call them then. And, that sort of stuff is very worth reading. There's also some black and white still photos that First Class Skeptic was working on those. If you go through, you can see that the alleged weight of the bomb and various other things are not consistent with the presentation. Same with things like views out of airplane windows, which are not consistent. It's a similar line of attack to some of these people discussing NASA.
Right,
the moon landing.
Moon landing, yeah.
Because there's a lot of, one of the leading people there were photographers, weren't they, I think? They were the people who did a lot of the preliminary work with photography. It shows if you've got expertise in any field, really, it can be useful. Just to get back to nuclear power, there are other significant things. For example, am I talking too fast?
No, you're fine.
I tend to gabble, am I? Okay. Yeah, for example, there is a lack of mutant plants and animals around these places. You know, if there were serious leaks of radioactive stuff, as are claimed, you'd expect plants to get, you know, their buds and so on to grow in strange ways, or you'd get mutated animals. They do try and make it. I mean, I remember seeing a picture of a rabbit, supposedly with no ears, and they do try to, they do their best to kind of rig up a few things. But the lack of mutations around what are supposed to have been the remains of nuclear power is kind of doesn't...
Okay, so what you're saying basically is that, well, for instance, like Fukushima, are you saying that that there was no dangerous emission of radiation that is now impacting...
Yeah.
You're saying that?
Yes, I'm saying that... Or at least this is probabilistic. I think it's likely. Yeah. If you look at, I think it was probably a dump load. I mean, I think it was just sitting there, giving off. It looked kind of menacing. You'd get kind of steam coming off it, but basically, it's just sitting there doing nothing. I don't think they would have built it in a plate tectonic zone there where they did. If it was really dangerous, for one thing. I mean, I know that's not a very convincing argument.
What about all of the reports of children on the West Coast, newborn babies, having thyroid issues?
I think that's Almost certainly just bullshit, to be honest. The amount of iodine in the thyroid is absolutely microscopic. It's hardly detectable. I mean, it's what's called a micro trace nutrient. It's essential to life. Essential to the thyroid. You've got to have it to work at full potential. But the amounts needed are tiny, microscopic. So I just don't go for that. There's an argument at all. If you look at the way they present the Fukushima explosion, they didn't even measure it. Their chief physicist said, in effect, that they use a computer-generated simulation to work out whether it is. That's quite an interesting point, because it's actually very difficult to measure radiation. You don't really know what you'll measure. I was going to talk about that, actually. So I would, if I were on the west coast of the US, I would ignore that and not be worried. It's just...
And so the reports are not really grounded on any scientific evidence?
They might be. You get people born with all kinds of weird things all the time. It's not...
And they're attributing it to the Fukushima issue?
In my view, that's almost certainly BS. I wouldn't worry about it, personally. As I say, iodine is hardly, is a microscopic amount. Even if you had it, it would decay. It wouldn't do much damage anyway, because there's just such a tiny amount of it. And it's got to come right the way across the ocean, As if you eat fish or something like that, that contains iodine, that would easily be greater than the amount coming from an explosion, in my view. Let me just go back to, there's a third world issue here, you see, as well. Both with nuclear weapons and nuclear power, if you look at some of the videos of Chinese tests, they're almost laughable. They're like a kind of caricature of American ones. They look as though they've been made by the same production team. In fact, you've got little models, and you have a crowd of people kind of yelling and sort of thing. And there's a similar Indian one, maybe Pakistan, doesn't really matter. There's what's a very unimpressive kind of bang, and all these people sort of start yelling. So, but the point is, there's a lot of money in it. You see, if you're in the third world, I remember reading a description of India. You've got Indian villages, which exist the same way they have for millennia, although the populations are a lot bigger because of Western technology. But from their point of view, if you're a nuclear physicist in India, you get a massive building, you get all the modern conveniences, it's a fantastic place to work in, and the last thing you want to be told is that the thing is a fake and you're going to be closed down. So there's a whole sort of industry trying to persuade third world people to get these things and not check them out very carefully, which they do. I mean, that's what happens. Let me just talk about this 1950s stuff. Is quite interesting because you get different technology and you can kind of make an imaginative effort to work out what might have gone wrong. I mean, for instance, my belief is that the transuranic elements are probably largely fake or unproven. There's a whole epidemic of inventing things like californium and americium with very high atomic weights, greater than uranium. And I think some of these, I'm not saying they all were, I mean, americium seems to exist, but I think some of these are supposed to have half-lives of millionth of a second or something, and decay away rapidly. And in view of the quantities they're supposed to make, which are a bit hardly detectable, I think a lot of that is just labs, getting enthusiastic and claiming stuff which they didn't find. And in fact, one very good piece of work done by first-class skeptic was to look back at 1930s papers, for example, including the Einstein's letter to FDR, but there are also some online, you can find them if you're lucky anyway, some scientific papers. There's one which was supposed to show that uranium can split into things like barium, into elements with a much smaller, with about half the atomic number. But if you look at them, I'm quoting this from memory, but basically they've got a sort of jam jar with, do you call them jam jars? A glass jar with a solution of uranium salt, uranium something soluble, uranium nitrate or something. And they've stuck it next to a source of radiation, like radium or something, and left it for 2 or 3 weeks. And then at the end of it, they were claiming to be able to detect barium and also the rise in temperature. I mean, the experiment sounds just complete. It doesn't sound at all convincing. It sounds like something. It sounds very similar to what was done with cold fusion. If it had been cold fusion, they would have pounced on it. But this is a supposedly historic thing. And anyway, so you've got suspect stuff here, and it's interesting to read the old books because you get their technology. They didn't have an awful lot of things to work with. They had mass spectrometers, so they could work out isotopic weights, fair enough. A mass spectrometer is a thing which uses something like gravity to separate out different weights of atoms, if that's clear enough. And you've got lines in spectra, you know, black Fraunhofer lines. I'm sure you're familiar with this stuff.
What are they doing? What are they doing in these nuclear power plants?
I think they have a fairly elaborate control panel, and it's quite possible, although, you know, you'd have to get behind it to see that it's just a fake. Basically, with a dump load, if the demand goes up, right, if people all switch on their kettles or whatever it is, if the demand goes up, you want to turn down the dump load. You want to turn down the amount going into your dump load. So it's the opposite of what you expect. All you need to do is have a control panel which works the opposite way that it says, you know. Do you see what I mean?
Sure. But are they producing depleted uranium? Are they producing
Issue.
Or is that a consequence of what they're doing in the nuclear power plants?
That's another issue. The question of whether I'm not at all convinced that it's worth the trouble of separating out uranium. And if these things are purely dump loads, as I'm sure some or quite a lot of them are, then the uranium is an irrelevance, really. You know, they kind of might pretend to have deliveries or something, but basically it's just a waste of time. And my guess about depleted uranium is it's just uranium. They mine quite a lot of the stuff, and they use it for things like bullets. And, you know, if you call it depleted uranium, that sounds kind of technical and, you know, impressive, but I would suspect it's just uranium. I think the injuries attributed to it in Iraq and so on are more likely to be due to chemical weapons, which can be very lethal and they're difficult to get rid of as well. I mean, radiation, in a sense, you know, it will decay away either quickly or slowly. In either case, as long as you're aware of it, it doesn't really make much difference, you know. If it decays fast, you just keep your distance. If it's a slow decaying thing, it probably doesn't matter really. But chemical warfare is a different matter. I mean, you can see it with, my Big Lies thing has some stuff about the Vietnam War and chemical warfare there, you know.
Oh, the Agent Orange, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I've got a photo which I took out of the New Scientist, it was years ago. It's very understated, you know. Most scientists kind of pretend that physics and chemistry are not used in war, but in fact that's probably their main use.
I know this is off topic, do you think that they're using frequency weapons in Iraq where they can just zap people from drones, unmanned drones?
I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought they just rely on bombs, you know. I don't think this wave stuff has been proven. For one thing, it's not. I suppose you could with lasers or something. I don't think so. I think they just use explosives.
And, okay.
All right. I was going to talk about alpha, beta, and gamma rays. I mean, it's a bit tedious. I mean, there's no actual word. I'm pretty sure there's no word for a stream of neutrons, and yet neutrons are supposed to be a key part of this business. You know, the neutrons supposedly to set off an atomic blast. You know, the uranium-235 is supposed to decay and give off a neutron, and then that splits and you get loads more neutrons, okay? But there's no word for neutron stream. You get alpha particles, which are essentially alpha particles of helium nucleus as a proton and a neutron, so it's a charged thing. You also get beta particles, which are electrons, and gamma particles, which are X-rays.
So let me just go back to something. I hate to interrupt you, but we have a lot of really horrible birth defects. I've seen pictures, numerous pictures, of children born in Iraq and Afghanistan. And are you saying that these chemical weapons cause birth defects?
Yeah, they do. They do. In Britain, there's a part of Wales called the Rhondda Valley, and that's had birth defects because of people, stuff being dumped, getting into the
groundwater.
Into the groundwater. Yeah, I forget this one where where parts of the intestines are outside the body. I forget what it's called. But I mean, these are not entirely new. I mean, they have existed since it's part of the biology is a bit kind of loose at the edges. Doesn't worry too much about.
All righty, we do have a break. Yep. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back, Hannah. And our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-life.org. And I have a very good question from the chat room. So what is the purpose of creating this huge construct of nuclear industry and all its support systems as a lie to create fear if they can just use other weapons that are not as expensive and cause as much damage? Is this all just a big sham to make money or to shift money?
How am I doing about that? Am I getting people listening to me?
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
Okay. Well, they might not be.
There are a lot of people listening.
Okay, first of all, you have to remember, after 1945, you see, physicists before that were just regarded as being a bit like engineers. So there's a whole industry, physicists were suddenly regarded as supermen. I remember that phrase being used. So there's a whole industry of people who would otherwise be not very, impressively employed. I think the other thing was this business of fear as a sort of New World Order thing. For example, I'm quite interested in Bertrand Russell. I read a lot of his stuff, and I think he was completely duped. Russell believed that, nuclear weapons were the biggest threat to mankind, and therefore you should have world government. So,
well, maybe that was just a scare tactic in order to impose world government at that time.
Well, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I'm in favor of world government myself, provided it's...
You are?
Well, provided it's honest and democratic. I think that's the best thing.
What makes you think that a bunch of corrupt governments, independent corrupt governments, could get together and make one uncorrupt world government? That's ridiculous.
Well, it's not ridiculous. It's a tricky issue, admittedly. But anyway, this is what Russell thought. Russell was in favor of... So was H.G. Wells, actually. They were all in favor of world government. I don't think they realized... They were all Jew innocent. They weren't Jew aware. None of them really realized that there's this behind-the-scenes stuff, which, in my view, is funded... It's basically a paper money thing. If you've got control of paper money, every time there's inflation, you get an extra chunk of it, don't you? And you can hand it to your friends and so on. And anyway, there was the fear aspect. And there was also, of course, if you've got that kind of fear aspect, you can get... I mean, you think of the money that's spent on missiles and supposed nuclear submarines. We had an issue on dealing with nuclear submarines. We think it's probably just a myth. I mean, for one thing, submarines existed since, the First World War.
Since the Civil War. They had submarines in the Civil War. Civil War.
Didn't that one sink? I thought they had one and it sank. But anyway, yeah, you take the point. There's not really any necessity for them. I think the reason they invented nuclear subs was so that they could spread the threat around the world. You had to get people thinking there's a threat around the world. So I think it's partly just a money-making scam, really. And the thing about weapons, you see, I think my view after kind of pondering is that the Vietnam War had no military significance at all. It was just a way of arms companies making money. And if you're somebody like Kissinger, you think of the way, I think more bombs were dropped than during the whole of the Second World War, most of them in sort of jungle. I think you've got arms companies.
Sure. And you also had a lot of testing for where the oil was in the China Sea during that war. And you had a lot of people making money getting those oil commissions. Anyway, to take a top-of-the-hour 60-second break. We'll be right back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. We will take questions after the next break at 800-313-9443. I think that with the Vietnam War, that it was about oil. In fact, the UN created the Economic Commission for Asia and the Far East in order to enter the oil exploration business, which they did big time in the South China Sea and in Vietnam. And of course, it did allow multinational corporations to go in there and set up cheap labor.
Well, yeah, but they could have done that without having any wars at all, couldn't they? They could have just negotiated. So, you know, I don't think that argument holds much water. We had a section on oil in Nuclize, and so that's actually a very good topic for obfuscation, isn't it? I mean, the stuff is underground. I mean, for all you know, there might be, you know, 100 people who've got oil, who've got guaranteed oil on their land, but they're not telling anybody, because if they just wait, they'll make more money. So I don't count that as an argument. I think that's somebody trying to find an argument for a war, just ignoring the fact that basically, I presume it was mostly Jews, I don't know, made money out of it.
Sure.
The trick really is to look at the situation before and after and see what's happened and assume, in default of any other evidence, that was the intention all along. And, I mean, for example, with Kennedy's murder, I presume the whole point of that was this business with silver and paper money, wasn't it? I think that was a Jewish thing. And again, we've got more of that stuff on Nuclize, on the off-topic stuff, which of course is not directly relevant to nukes. But let me just talk about revisionists, the sort of psychology of people who get involved with this kind of stuff. There, in my experience, I say about one in six of them is useful. One, you know, some of them are just don't understand the subjects or are too emotional or something like that. I'd say it's about one in six. I got into this really partly through the politics of Vietnam, but there's a friend of mine called Ivor Catt, who was very interesting. He collected a whole list of people who were sort of alternative, and this was before internet. I'm not quite sure how he did it. I suppose by writing around or something. And some of those were very bad. One of those was Harold Hillman, who was a biologist who got a very bad press. I've put some material on my website about him, including an interview. I've got a detailed, very long interview which goes through his whole life. It's a bit boring unless you want to know, you know, if you're a biographer, it will be useful. Anyway, through via Ivor Catt, I got in touch with people, including a very good physicist as well, who wised me up on things like superfluid helium as a fraud. You know, there's a theory that if you cool helium down to a low enough temperature, it becomes superfluid. But his theory was that, like everything else, if you cool it down low enough, you get a solid. And since helium is an inert gas, you get, in effect, a very fine, probably the finest powder in the universe. And of course, it can sneak its way through unglazed pots, that kind of thing. So he was very good. He had good theories about clouds as well. Anyway, there are some people who are good. You get some people who are try to get other people to work for them. I remember there was an organization called the Campaign for Academic Freedom or something like that. And they had a meeting, and they all sort of got together. And one of them said, well, what we should have is a showcase exhibit. And I would suggest my case, because it illustrates all the points. And sort of person B got up and said, well, I agree with that, but I think my own case is better. And eventually they just fell apart because they couldn't mutually support each other. And you also get people who stay in the same stuff for years and years, like AIDS, for example. I met a woman called Joan Shenton.
Are you talking about scientific revisionism?
Yeah, I'm using revisionism in a
Broadway.
I'm assuming it's a and I'm assuming it's a good thing. There is another use of the word revisionism, which is to suggest that it's you know, that people have looked at stuff. It's based on the idea of Holocaust denial. They call revisionists you know, baddies. But I'm assuming that it's a good policy. Even if you find nothing wrong with the stuff, you know, a dose of revisionism. If you look at it, you check it out. You look at it, check it, and preferably go to the fundamentals, you know. You look at the way people have got their information and see what you find, really. The Joan Shenton is still working on AIDS. I mean, she had some TV programs in the 1980s, I think. I mean, I date that from 1984. I think that was a fraud. HIV/AIDS was a fraud caused by virologists wanting to make money, basically. The war against cancer failed. It was Nixon's thing, war against cancer. They found no connections with viruses. But virology is an interesting subject because,
I'd like to stick with the nuke situation because I think that's the most fascinating thing that you, one of the most fascinating things that you have on your website. And because we've all grown up thinking, okay, look what the United States did in Japan, at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And, I mean, the whole issue of nuclear power is pretty important.
Yeah, the nuclear issue is important. I think it's... I'm not sure whether it was planned all along. You never know these things, or whether it just sort of developed. But I think there was... I think it was a post 1945 Jewish thing when they got... I mean, the fact they were able to swing this Holocaust thing, and it's still going. I mean, 70 years later, they still got more or less a monopoly on this Holocaust business. Although
it's pretty profitable.
Profitable. It's been exposed for years as well. And so, I do take the view myself. I think the whole scare about nukes was just, BS.
To scare us? Okay. Instill fear in the population.
Well, it gets people to pay for defense, doesn't it? I mean, what is the proportion of, quotes, defense in the U.S. budget? I mean, it's like
50% more than every other country put together. Probably more than that.
Well, an awful lot of it. It's just fake. I think one of the important things is to bear in mind is the productivity of modern technology. You know, you've got, motors, airplanes, all this kind of stuff. Very efficient stuff to dig and pack and move things around. And really, in a way, it's hard to see how you can keep everybody employed. I mean, if you believe in the work ethic, and you've got, and you can produce everything that people want, and in a small corner of the total effort available, then you're going to get frauds, you know. And I think there were in history, you know, in my view, religion was essentially a fraud, for want of a better way of putting it. I mean, there are a lot of bishops and so on, and people who made money, not on a sound economic basis, whatever other stuff they may have come up with. And I think nowadays it's like that, only magnified to a kind of ridiculous extent. There are so many pseudo jobs, make work jobs, and all this kind of stuff.
Sure.
And advertising promotion.
We do have some callers. Why don't we take a call?
Can I ask how many you've got? If you have to tell me. You've got a reasonable number. The only reason I ask is so that I can time my reply.
Okay, well, we just have one right now, but as soon as we have one, then we'll have a lot more. Let's take Harley in Indiana. Harley, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you, Diana. I just wanted to comment. He mentioned Vietnam and the bombs that were dropped in Vietnam.
Yeah,
go ahead. And he thought they were dropped in the jungle, probably. Well, first-hand knowledge from me, I worked in Las Vegas, Tactical Air Command, and I worked on pilots and officers, and an officer came back from Vietnam after 100 missions of flying, because that's when they were returned, after 100 missions.
Yeah.
And the dentist I worked with asked him the questions, and he always asked questions. And he goes, I know you can't really tell us, but which bomb? And the guy goes, well, you're right, I can't tell you. He goes, but I guess 3/4 of the Earth's surface is covered with water. He said, so I wouldn't be in violation of my oath tell you that every time I dropped my bombs, I was over the water. I can't tell you what buildings were located down there, he says, because that would be a violation of my oath. And I can't tell you there was any ships around. He said, but every time I dropped my load for 100 missions, I was over the ocean.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Well, that's what they did, because that's how they discovered where the oil was.
Okay.
And that's why they dumped him in the water in the South China Sea.
Are you saying he did that for humanitarian reasons?
No.
I don't know why they did it. All I know is that's what he told me. And I wasn't too happy because I had already had friends that had been killed in Vietnam.
Yeah, but they did invade it. I mean, if you were a Vietnamese, you're perfectly entitled to defend yourself.
Absolutely. Just like we're going to be entitled to defend ourselves when the United Nations troops enter America and come out in the open, because they're here.
Yeah, well, yes. It's a uncertain future, isn't it? Hey,
yes.
Can I ask you, Harley, what did you think of my comments, my presentation? Do you think have you got any skepticism about nuclear bombs?
You mean about them being used?
About the existence of them at all?
Well, geez, you know, I really don't know. And unfortunately, I didn't really hear all of your comments because I had to go to a different phone call. You know, there is a lot of things they have out there that are false. I can tell you, too, that another officer that this man questioned, because he asked all the officers, he'd ask them questions. And
yeah.
He goes, what's up here what's up in Area 51? And the guy goes, he says, I can't tell you. He says, but I can tell you one thing. If the American people had any conceivable idea of the weapons and the stuff that we have up there, he said, it'd scare the hell out of them.
Yeah. You got no further detail than that.
No, he couldn't say any more than that. You know, but I worked on all officers when I was in the military out there, stationed out there. And, you know, people from there and where they set off the nuclear bombs and all that stuff.
I do wish people would talk more, you know. I mean, they come back and say, well, I'm not going to talk about it. So all the lessons get lost. It's,
Think they're instructed not to talk about it, but as far as these... all these bombs in the ocean, there's a committee report for Vietnam that was created in 1967, and an actual geological survey began in 1968 with two ships, explosives, and a team of geologists. Now, these explosives, perhaps in the form of mini bombs, were necessary to expose the salt dome structures, which signaled oil deposits deep under the South China Sea. And that's why all these planes, all of these bombs were being dropped in the sea. It had nothing to do with destroying Vietnam. It was Standard Oil looking for oil deposits.
I think you're confusing two things. When you're looking for oil, you do have explosions on the surface, and you have sensors, you know, like microphones at varying distances away. And you can tell by the time it takes for the shockwave to get through to the thing what the structure is underneath. I don't think that a bomb just dropped at random would have the right effect.
Well, that's what the report indicated.
Well, part of the purpose of the Vietnam War is to destroy America's will to resist. Make them tired of war.
Yeah, I think we're in full agreement that the official reasons are... bullshit. Sorry, I keep saying that. The official reasons are not what they say. It's a pity. Harley, do me a favor and listen. Look at my website. Look at nukelies.org, and just kind of ponder it and read through it and things. It's a joint effort. There are about 20 people there. In fact, I can insert new stuff if I want to. I mean, I can edit it in. There's a bit of new stuff. It's not all.
Okay, I will do that. Why don't you spell that website for me?
Nukelies.
L-I-E-S.
Nukelies.
Oh, Nukelies. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, .org.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
I will do that.
Harley, thanks for calling in.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, let's take Andrea from Oklahoma. Andrea?
Yes, I just want to bring attention to this one NOVA special that was, and you can find it on YouTube. It's about the animals, the wolves of Chernobyl, and the wildlife that is flourishing there, They show all these different wolves, moose, elk, deer. They're all just, the populations are just growing. They all look normal. They don't have three eyes or four tails or anything of that nature. And the video or the special on Nova, which you can find on YouTube.
I've seen that video, actually. I remember
it. It just made, well, I questioned that. It's like, well, will that mean that all the animals there in Japan will be fine and will flourish? And it makes you wonder.
Andrea, let me tell you, as far as I'm, to the best of my knowledge, the Fukushima thing, well, it had no radiation at all. It's not dangerous at all. There is another theory to do with all this stuff, which is to do with land clearance. You know, if you had Hiroshima bombs, it clears it. You know, they had all these wooden buildings, and I think there was a transition from a sort of samurai outlook to a kind of people in suits business outlook. And the people in suits wanted the area cleared. I think, in fact, there's another article on Nuclize about the Great Fire of London, which might have been connected with Jews moving into finance after Cromwell. You know, they had a Bank of England and stuff, new buildings then. And to clear the land, arguably, there was a fire started.
Would you apply that also to the BP oil spill? Or to Katrina?
I don't know much about the BP oil spill. I think the impression I get, a hurricane.
Yeah, Katrina, Hurricane Katrina. We do have to take a 3-minute break,
yeah,
Andrea. Okay. You're welcome to stay over the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. Yeah, I mentioned Katrina. Would you think that was a land clearing situation?
Not really. I think it was just a hurricane. Am I missing something here?
It's probably another topic. But anyway, you mentioned that you thought that the suits in Japan really wanted to clear the land. Are you saying that they were complicit with the American military who was bombing them?
Yes, I do actually. There was the bomber. What's that famous bomber? I've forgotten his name. I've got a photo of him on the background graphic of Big Lies. But he got awarded the Grand Rose Cross or something of Japan. It's their highest honor, and for bombing. Let me just look here. It's on the Hiroshima Nagasaki thing somewhere.
Okay. Meanwhile, let me take the next caller in line, Steve in Virginia.
Yeah, come on.
Yes. Hello. Thank you.
Hi, Steve.
I didn't catch some of the earlier comments, but the gentleman is saying that Fukushima, nothing happened. And I know some of the other people we hear on the internet radio, pretty good people, they have said that, it happened or it's getting worse. Is it just simply that they're getting wrong information, would you say, as far as Fukushima and the effects that they say are happening?
You're asking me?
Yes.
In my view, it wasn't, I think it was a dump load and it had no radiation attached to it at all, and it was undangerous. And it's, you know, if you've got a dump load, you've got a few megawatts, gigawatts of current going through it, and you can get a big meltdown, which has nothing to do with radiation.
So we're just hearing this is deceptive, or we're just getting wrong information.
Yes, you're being lied to. You're being lied to. This, if you look at the stuff on Hiroshima, they don't seem to have got their story straight. There's a discussion on whether there was radiation or not. There's a section here, radiation or no radiation, which was the misinformation. There was no genetic damage in Hiroshima.
Oh.
So they had their stories, which were
What about that, is it Bikini Atoll, the island they say can't be inhabited in the Pacific due to the tests that they did, the Navy did?
I think it's out of date. I mean, you can, if you look up these places on internet, you'll find they've got people living on them, living in them. I think that was a fake. We didn't get around to that, until some time actually. If you look at Nuke Lies, there's a section on here we are, bogus H-bomb and H-bomb test sites, Bikini and Marshall Islands.
Yeah. We're basically, we know that the as you say, the Jews, I know that's the false Jews, the Zionists, they put out a lot of false information, a lot of times, and do you think that this is simply, part of that, and then the chance to intimidate, and such?
Yeah, I think it's basically true. And of course, there are collaborators, there are sort of fellow traveling whites that go along with it.
Right.
I think you'll find that all the companies that are supposed to monitor nuclear power stations, you know, they have special companies which are supposed to do the processing and so on. They're all Jewish run.
Right.
So I think they just have a collection like that. I mean, I may be wrong. I'd be perfectly happy if you could get somebody to do an independent investigation.
When we speak about the globalists, it's just a curiosity I've had. Do you believe that the largest, the main percentage that makes up that group, are they of the Zionist ancestry and such? Do you believe?
I think, I take the same view as people like, well, what I take to be the same view as people like Kevin MacDonald and a whole lot of people who have focused in on this Jewish thing, particularly, well, he's an American academic because he's interested in Jews in the USA and the way they push for immigration and, you know, things like pornography and that kind of thing, and fraud. And so I'm perfectly happy and convinced that a great deal of this stuff is Jewish, you know.
Yeah.
And, but you get collaborators. I mean, like the Queen in Britain, in my view, is the most useless and worthless monarch Britain's ever had. But she sort of goes along with it because, you know,
right.
It's like you get sucked in, don't you? You get your money, you get your, you know, you get a sort of sweet talked by a Rothschild.
Do you believe that many overseas are more aware of America's problems than many Americans? You know, with the country.
I think that must be true. I get the impression that Russia is kind of recovering from, I take it you agree, or you're aware that there's an argument that Jews formed the USSR and ruined it, really. They killed off millions of people. But there's something similar happened in Hungary and Romania. You know,
yeah.
Hungary,
well,
for example.
Say, apparently, they say, you know, Lenin, well, the Bolshevik Revolution, of course, was, they were the Zionists there, and Stalin later and such, and all those horrors that came, and of course many, they say, came years ago, came as they dispersed, came from the Khazar.
Many
came from through Russia at that time.
I think the Khazar idea must be true, because just looking at the geography of the thing. And
All righty, we do have a break. Steve, you're welcome to stay over the break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. And we still have Steve on the phone who we're having a conversation. So please continue.
Yeah, thank you very much. I was going to ask, is there any scenario where we would or should be worried about the nuclear material, or say a nuclear plant leaking? Is there any scenario where, you know, where we should be worried, would you say, to the guest?
Respect. I just don't think that they use nuclear stuff, and moreover, there's no question that there are nuclear isotopes, and they do decay. But the scare system, the scare relied on people not really doing the sums, you know. I mean, there was a theory that there was a thing called a cobalt bomb. I think it was invented by Herman Kahn. You get supposedly an atom bomb surrounded by cobalt, and cobalt, there's an isotope of cobalt which has a half-life of, you know, like 15 days or something. And they thought that would drift around the world, killing off all life. But if you think about it, the amount of radiation broadcast is not that great, and it's spread over a huge area. And in any case, after 40 or 50 days, it's completely gone. I genuinely think it was a scare story. And in my view, much the same is true here. But it's impossible to be absolutely certain. And it's also very difficult to test for radiation. There's no good... If you look up technical books on testing for radiation, metrology, you know, the measurement of radiation, they miss it out, as far as I know. The ones I've got, I've looked up some old reference books to see what was accepted knowledge at the time. And if you look up things like the radiation in above the Van Allen belt, that kind of thing, they're just missing. They just don't deal with it. And you'll have a great deal of difficulty finding out how they actually test genuinely for radioactive stuff.
In general, the concentrations are such that this stuff dissipates rapidly enough that it's not a factor to be concerned about.
Yes,
I'm saying when you have a radiation leak of some kind, or
well, it's described as a radiation leak, but if the hypothesis of the dump load is true, then there is no radiation. It's just a sort of pretense. You know, they have the electricity coming in, and it goes through coils and things, which look as though coils underwater, which looks like it looks exactly the same as a reactor would. You know, you'd get hot water generated from these coils.
Does the radiation dissipate quicker in air or in water, or land? Is there anything on that's important to know?
You're missing the point here, that there probably isn't any radiation at all. It's just a kind
of okay.
thing. But generally speaking, radiation is accepted to decay at a pretty constant speed. It doesn't matter what you do to it.
Okay.
So, you know, it's got a half-life which is pretty much fixed.
Yeah.
So any it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, if you swim in it, you'd have a difficult job getting anything like a dangerous dose.
Yeah. I mean, those reports as far as Chernobyl, how the horrors we've heard about that, is that basically false?
I think it's just not true. If you look at the area now, as Andrea said, it's flourishing. No sign of anything wrong.
Yeah.
Now they've encased it in concrete, and now you see that might be to keep radiation out, or it might be to just make sure that nobody's going to get close to it. You know,
land control or something.
It has cleared the area. I mean, that's part of Ukraine, and there's nobody living there now, as far as I know. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your patience, your information. This is the geopolitical question here. In your opinion, what the new world order that we see there with these Zionists? What do you think that they want to achieve? I mean, they want their system, but. What do you see there in general?
It's a good question. I think they've overreached themselves, you know, because for one thing, even if they did get a world order with Jews running everything, all that's needed is for things to collapse, and you know, their power would, you know, their power is very dependent on legal constraints, isn't it? Basically, if they turn up in an area and say, you know, gee, I own this building, this plant in Russia, or I own this bit of Uganda or something, if they turn up, if the international legal system works, then they can hang on to it. But if the local people say, well, we haven't heard of you, and, you know, take the next plane out, they've got a problem.
Yeah.
And I don't think... I'm not sure that they can enforce it worldwide. I think it's going to be chaos, really. And there's an important point about do you remember Mordecai Vanunu? Mordecai Vanunu, he was announced. Yeah, he was the chap who supposedly announced that Israel had nuclear weapons. The reason that they chose that path was because the U.S. is not supposed to deal with any country that hasn't signed some agreement or other. So Vanunu's role was to say that Israel had nuclear weapons, but not to be officially accepted, you know. And he was supposed to have been in solitary confinement for years, which in my view is a perfect cover, because nobody's going to know, are they?
Yeah.
If somebody's in solitary, I mean, he can just... He had about 6 or 7 brothers, I think. They probably all looked much the same, I'd guess. So probably that was a feature. Anyway, I think the whole Vanunu thing was a fake. I don't think Israel has nuclear weapons at all. And, of course, that makes them vulnerable. So it's quite possible there'll be some big crunch-up with... It's possible that Islam could ally with the West, for example, although I'm not enthusiastic about Islam. Well, for that matter, I'm not very enthusiastic. I mean, the West has done some pretty evil things, although often at Jewish prompting. So is that any help? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we see all these horrible things, these invasions of these different countries, you know, for the control and their natural resources, regime change, and
okay.
A lot of things on a large scale. And I guess it can be scary as we're observing these different things and other things on a smaller scale.
Can I just add something there? That another motive, which only struck me a few years ago, is the business of controlling the central bank. You know, if you control, I don't know if you know this, but North Korea does not have a bank controlled by the Rothschilds.
Mm.
And Iran doesn't have a bank controlled by the Rothschilds.
Yeah.
I'm told, I don't know if that's true. So their motive is probably, you know, they don't mind about Americans and Iranians and North Koreans all getting killed, so long as they end up getting their percentage of the gross national product. That's
right.
Do you see what I mean? That's a good thing.
Right. Well, I believe I understood that was the case with regard to Mali and Libya. Well, Mali, I guess, to get the gold, but Libya, Gaddafi didn't have that, and he resisted that central bank system as others have, and so they. But how do you what do you feel is a practical way when it comes down to it? A lot of people feel we're on the verge of civil unrest and chaos, and I mean not only in this country, but what do you feel is a practical way to fight these people? Is it more on the local level?
That's a very good question. I think it has to be everything. Really, it has to be information. You have to have people aware of these possibilities. Don't you? Have to get away from this controlled media, because for 100 years now, ever since the First World War, people have been at the mercy of the media. They all, most British people, I think, still believe that Churchill was a great hero, or a lot of them do.
He was the worst thing that ever happened to Britain.
Well, he wrecked it, that's right. And so there has to be information out there. There has to be practical activity. I mean, I wouldn't be, if there's a coup or something. I don't know much about the U.S. military in everyday life, but you know that Sobrovsky thing. I think that was a fake by some military people in America. It seems to use computer-generated graphics both for the female interviewer and the chap responding. I think that's a sort of shot across their bows, you know. I mean, you can't rule out a coup, can you? Really, I mean, it depends on things like paper money. You know, in Iraq they had huge. I mean, it sounds fantastic, doesn't it? Whole pallets loaded up with whatever their local currency is, or maybe it was dollars. I don't know.
Dinar or something.
But I mean, that's an important thing. So long as paper money is supported. Is backed, and that's important. But of course, if it fails, you've got the situation in Russia with rubles after the decline of the Tsar. You know, so it's possible there might be some. Your guess is as good as mine, really. I'm sorry to be so negative, but I do think it's important to if they've got this nuke threat. You know, the Samson option. They very unpleasantly threatened to. I mean, I don't know if this was official Israeli policy, but the Samson option says. But, you know, if we go down, we're going to take the world with us,
right.
Nukes. Very nasty threat. And
thank you. Well, I believe the fight will continue as more people become aware, and Dina's program here is one of the best ones, I believe, for informing people and by way of the different guests and such. So we appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Well, I'm pleased to be on it. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Thank you.
You too, Steve. Thank you. All right, let's take Wes in Idaho. Wes, welcome to the program.
Hello. Anyone out there familiar with the name Galen Windsor?
Yeah, we brought him up earlier in the program.
Really?
Yeah.
He's still around. Okay, you know then about his nuclear scam video years ago?
Yeah, we discussed it a bit earlier.
Oh.
And he's right, he's correct about the... probably correct about the scam aspect of it, but I don't think he's correct about the nuclear power aspect. I think he's basically, I guess, you know, he's basically hired by the nuclear power industry to promote nuclear power. But in my opinion, nuclear power is a fake, and so he's onto a loser, really. But it needs a proper investigation, in my view.
Okay, I'm sorry I missed the first of the program, but I thought this was something that really, what he did years ago was pertained to the subject. So thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Wes. Yeah, I think it does, he's certainly an interesting gentleman that said some interesting things in the video that I saw.
On Section 10 here, we've got the rogues and dupes thing here. People, groups, organizations with some nuclear links, you know, nuke liars, publicists, debunkers. Some of them are honest, some of them aren't, some of them are hired. But there's a whole section on dupes because it's important. You know, people do respect some propagandists. I mean, here's Chomsky, for example. There's one of them I've got a list of here.
Sure. Now, what about the tests that were performed in Utah, Nevada, and that we hear about? And there's a group called Downwinders, and the government has paid out millions of dollars because of all of the cancer victims in those states that allegedly occurred because of all of these tests. Now, are you saying that probably these tests didn't occur, or that, I mean, I know people whose entire herd of sheep died as a result of some of these things that they were doing.
Yeah, the alleged test. We've got a section on the test, including looking at the visual evidence. You know, they have these great big fireballs, which are basically just sort of napalm explosion. I don't believe for a second they had any nuclear explosions at all in Utah. Now, if people got... I mean, there are people who get cancer. And you see, from the government point of view, it's other people's money they're paying out anyway. It doesn't really matter, does it? So either they had a good case and they've got cancer from some other source, in my view, or they didn't have a good case, but the government paid out anyway to support the myth of nukes, you see. Do you understand what I'm saying? So I don't believe... I mean, if you go to these places, they're radioactive. If you look at the evidence, there's supposed to be stuff called trinitite. When they had the Trinity test, the sand there was supposed to have been covered, you know, converted to a kind of green crystalline stuff. And I think, and that's not shown anywhere else. And I think probably they just got some material from, there's a place in Africa that's had volcanoes, had volcanic action, which has this kind of glassy stuff. So I think it was just a fake. There's a good photo on Nuclei somewhere of Oppenheimer with the general who was supposed to have been running the Manhattan Project, and there's a sort of little thing on the ground looking like the remains of just burning old bits of old rubbish, and that's could certainly not have been left over from a huge tower which had a proper nuclear explosion on it. It's just a piece of it's like a bit of prop or something. So I would say that they might have got cancer for other reasons. I don't know, but right. I don't think they would have got it from radiation. But I may be wrong.
I got was that this guy, this uncle, he was like 16 and he was helping his uncle clean up all of these dead sheep as a result of some sort of catastrophe, probably from the testing that they were doing. And years later, decades later, he got cancer.
It could be. There's another issue with sheep, which is completely different, which is a chemical thing to the sheep dips. It may be that they, it may be they were deliberately poisoned to make it look as though there was a, you know,
ah,
was, or it may be that.
Possibility, huh?
There's a section on Big Eyes about organophosphate insecticides, which were investigated in Britain. They caused, I'm all but certain that they caused BSE, you know, mad cow disease.
Right.
Because
right.
There's a whole swathe of England which gets what's called warble fly. It's a fly which burrows into the hides of cattle, and it leaves holes where they exit, horrible things, you know. So they'd get this insecticide and pour it on the backs of these animals, pretty much neat, and of course they couldn't wash it off or anything, and they all got mad cow disease. And the pattern of mad cow disease is the same as the pattern of warble fly, but it was kind of covered up. They had an inquiry. It was chaired by Jew. I've got a note in front of me here, chaired by Jew. I went to the inquiry, and they virtually sidelined this issue. You know, if you have an investigation, you can talk about any, there's any number of subjects. You can waste time on all kinds of things. So
sure.
I'd say the UTOR stuff is just more.
Okay. Alrighty. We have another caller, Julian from Scotland. Julian, welcome.
Hello to your guest.
Hi, good day.
Can you tell me if there's a difference between nuclear detonation and incendiary devices?
Well, there is a difference. Incendiary devices work in the first place. Our view is that nuclear strategy is not possible for various reasons. So what you've been told is probably false. But of course, incendiary bombs, yeah, they work. They're like napalm, aren't they?
Because of what we were told to do with Hiroshima and Nagasaki in various films, among others, like E.J. Foster, I think, who'd wrote a novel to do with an ambassador's son in Shanghai.
I'm sorry, I can't make out what you're saying.
An ambassador's son in Shanghai.
Yeah, what about him?
Gentlemen, we do have a quick 3-minute break. I'm sorry to interrupt, but we'll be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest today has been Ray West. His website is big-lies.org. And we had a caller, Julian. Julian, did you want to ask your question?
I wanted to find out, since nuclear power is so non-existent, would incendiary devices do the same effect, like, let's say, on Germany?
Yes, well, Germany was bombed with incendiary bombs, wasn't it? I mean, Dresden is the classic example.
Yes. Apparently 90,000 tons.
Right.
Well, I think they had they had several runs, didn't they? They had big bombs to take the roofs off, and then they put the incendiary bombs after it, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would they have the same effect as nuclear weapons?
Well, they would have similar effect. Yeah, if you look at the evidence about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you get a lot of stuff about burns, and in fact, there are some. I looked it up myself. There are various books on the subject, including one which I did a review of. It's a collection of essays by school children who were at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, who lived through it, and the essays were written 10 or 20 years later. I mean, for example, one of these girls said that she was 600 yards away from the epicenter, 600 yards, and she sort of heard this noise. She opened the door and she looked out, and there were all these burning houses. Now, I mean, that just is not compatible with a nuclear explosion.
No.
Okay. Yeah, if you look on nuclize.org, I'm sorry, I just don't have any time left now, really, but if you look on nuclize.org and then look at this thing on the section on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there are about 20 different forums, different topics, and you'll see, for example, the impossible shadows, fake ruins, that kind of thing, and the radiation problems, which don't exist, that kind of thing. False testimonies. There's also evidence that the, for example, the antenna couldn't have worked, and also the radius of bombing uncertainty was actually much greater than Hiroshima. With the technology at the time, they didn't even know at that time about the jet stream in the upper atmosphere. So, I mean, they couldn't even have bombed. They couldn't have got it accurate. Yeah. So there's an enormous amount of bits of evidence saying that it couldn't possibly have been nuclear bomb. In fact, there's a very recent one. There was a recent article in the Daily Telegraph showing a double mushroom cloud in Hiroshima. You know, it's taken from a different angle. If you look at the conventional picture of the mushroom cloud, you can see that it's in two halves, or it may have been airbrushed onto it. But if you look at this business, if you look at split Hiroshima clouds, there's a red thing. It's in proofs they were not bombed. I've put it near the top somewhere, I think.
From what you've been saying, you agree with a lot of what President Ahmadinejad has to say about it.
I don't know much about Ahmadinejad. I've been quite impressed when I've seen him. But I mean, you just don't know if these people are phonies or not.
He says there's not a lot to do with nuclear power anymore.
Alrighty. Well, thank you, Julian, for calling into the program, and thank you so much, Ray, for being a guest on the program. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope we can do this again.
I hope so, too. It's very nice to speak to you. Thanks for inviting me on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.